You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 2nd of June. We've got Palo Alto Network results after market close tonight. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Alyssa Fleuren. She's MD Merchant West Investments. The Tiger brand results. A lot of moving parts there, but perhaps what's most striking is that after a really strong 2025, it's had a fairly horrid 26, and maybe there's some value there. Kieran Whitten from Anchor, they're listing two actively managed ETFs. We'll get the details and benefits there. And then we're talking around how AI is helping lend to invisible customers. We see TransUnion, MTN trying this. How do we do credit scores on people who are not in the formal economy? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, Bloomberg: Anthropic has confidentially submitted draft paperwork for a public listing. And just last week, they did a capital raise at just below a $1 trillion valuation. Business Day: Status secured 13.5 million vaccine doses to fight foot and mouth disease. Steenhuisen says rollout has reached 4.4 million animals as foot and mouth efforts intensify. Morning markets: US is green, S&P up 0.25%, Nasdaq a little over 0.5% higher. The East is mixed. We've got Sydney off 0.1%, Tokyo down 1.5%, Hong Kong is up 1%, and Tencent 6.5% higher as it talks around putting AI into WeChat. Commodities mostly green, gold futures the exception, 4,529, Brent 94.56, platinum 1,950, palladium 1,388. The rand is 16.31, Bitcoin 70,900, and top 40 opening call, green open, 1,420 points, or 1.33% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning now with Alyssa Fleuren. She is our MD at Merchant West Investments. And let's appreciate the early morning. The Tiger brand numbers out. I mean, revenue up only 1.3%, but volume growth up 4.5%. They talk about ROE getting back to getting some notable improvements there. This was for 6 months ending March. Your thoughts on the results as they came through?
Morning, Simon. Yeah, the market actually took a dislike to those numbers for the for the 6 months, and the share recovered quite well yesterday. So I think what the market is focusing on is that earnings per share from continuing operations is now down about 35%. But what we need to remember is this is a base effect. So last year's first half was flattered by once-off profits, and when you strip that out, then the picture looks a lot more positive. You've got headline earnings now up 24% without the once-off profits, and you've got this margin increase. You mentioned that they posted really good volume numbers, and that normalized volume growth came in around 4.5%. That's well ahead of even the company's own 1-3% guidance, and it was actually driven by that grains and the culinary division. So Simon, this was a business that, you know, spent years pushing prices up, and then they watched shoppers walk away. But what we now see is they've shifted from pushing prices to driving volumes and affordability, and that's really working for them. You can see Tastic, Jungle, Koo, Cross and Blackwell, these are all gaining market share. So, you know, when you say, why has the share been so weak? And part of that answer is actually you're working off a high base. So 2025 was this exceptional year. You had earnings was up about 50%. And last year you had a special dividend. So the share ran quite hard, and, you know, expectations were lifted of the company. But in my opinion, a lot of these easy ones are now largely behind the company. You know, the cost cutting and the big capital returns, they've all done their job. And the market is wanting to see some organic growth. And you've also got that structural threat of private label. So looking forward, you know, you've got a consumer that's under pressure. Your home and personal care business is going backwards, and with revenue, it's almost down about 10%. And management is warning that these geopolitical tensions could actually disrupt the supply chains and push input costs up. So that might actually force price increases, which is exactly what could test the volume recovery that we're already seeing that's making this result look really good.
I get your point. And if you strip out the special dividend, which was a nice special dividend from a year ago, the dividend yield is quite modest. The PE sort of in the low teens. A quick last question. We've seen a fair bit of a sell-off. Is there opportunity here, or is this a case of re-rating to a fair value?
Yeah, so Simon, you know, you can see what I'd want to see is what's happening with that volume growth at the end of the year. That would be a key determiner of whether this company is able to grow versus an AVI or another food producer.
Yeah, it's a fair point. And the likes of AVI, who defend margins at all costs. We'll leave it there. Celisa Fruin from Merchant West Investments, where she's the MD. Appreciate the early morning time. Our poll today on LinkedIn is around those Tiger Brands. Is there some value here? What do you think? Certainly, they've got to defend those margins. Have your vote on LinkedIn. Give you money, smoother returns for StanLib Asset Management. The StanLib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Kieran Whitten from Anchor. Kieran, appreciate the time. You're usually here to chat markets. Today, you're here to chat products. Anchor has listed two actively managed ETFs, this with an Easy Equities partnership. I suppose, first question, actively managed ETFs. We're seeing a fair bit of growth in this space. Why the JC listed active ETFs?
Good morning, Simon. Good to be on the show. Yeah, Simon, so I think it's no secret that since the 2008 global financial crisis, ETFs have generated significant inflows around the world on a global scale. But then in South Africa, key regulatory reforms in 2022 enabled the first listing of the first actively managed ETF on the JSE. And it's actually AM ETFs have actually become the fastest growing segment of the JSE's listed product offering. And the industry's grown from the first AM ETF listing in 2022 to industry assets now with 19 billion assets under management. And we expect this to grow above 50% per year for the next few years. And Simon, ultimately what it comes down to is the next generation of investors is much more fee sensitive than the older generation. And these ETFs are aimed partly at a younger, we could say, more fee sensitive investor base. And just for evidence of this, of the total assets on the Easy Equities platform, which is the market that we are looking to target initially, they have about 100 billion on their platform. About 35 billion is invested in ETFs.
Oh wow.
And a vision that we share with ETF, with Easy Equities, is ultimately democratizing access to our investment strategies. And this is something that obviously has not been previously available to the retail investing public. And it's a vision that we share with Easy Equities. And ultimately, this is a very positive thing for the financial sector in South Africa and for the general public, because you've seen the market responding to investor demand for these sorts of products.
Yeah, I get your point. I mean, 35%. I hadn't realized quite how much is into the ETFs, and of course, it is that accessibility. It's going to be yourself and Rekanari, of course, is also a regular on the show here. You're doing two. These are, as I understand, these are equity. That's very much high conviction funds, and it's going to be a local and a global that you are, in fact, have listed in the last week.
Yes, Simon. So like you've said, one fully 100% global equity ETF and one local ETF. Both will follow our flagship house strategies at Anchor, which we think is very attractive, again, for the retail investing public to get involved with, because they're now going to have access to this in just a few seconds on the JSE, like buying and selling a share, whereas before you would have had to come through an Anchor advisor or go through a platform and send all the FICA documentation. It will be much easier for investors to access this now. The offshore ETF will be based on the investment philosophy is growth at a reasonable price. That is
GOP, yep.
our Yes, GARP, exactly. That is our offshore strategy. So we're targeting market leaders here with high earnings growth, strong cash generation, as well as attractive valuations. And just to throw some names out there of the type of shares that will be in this ETF, you can think of Alphabet, Fortinet, Ferrari, Uber. It will be rand denominated, with the US dollar denominated ETF under consideration should flows warrant it down the line. Our local investment philosophy is very similar. It's also looking for resilient earnings growth through the economic cycle, especially in an economy that is obviously displaying very low growth. This local ETF will be more benchmark cognizant than the offshore one, and that is just given that macro factors play such a big role in determining the outcome of South Africa's equity markets. So you really can live and die by the call of being underweight or overweight gold. So it is just important to be aware of benchmark weights. But again, companies that we will look to invest in here will be the likes of Capitec, Discovery, Boxer, industry leaders, and obviously banks we find very attractive at the moment as well.
And I like the point, and the key point around it, and you said it, I mean, this is around the accessibility. I mean, yes, I could always have got the Anchor View. I'd have to, you know, go through an advisor. I'd have to do a new FIC. It would be a new platform. Most of my listeners out there have got a JSE account already, and they can easily access this and get the sort of Anchor team on their behalf. And that is part of the attraction of these actively managed ETFs, is being exchange traded.
Yeah, exactly, Simon. It completely lowers that barrier to entry to being involved in an institutional like product. And like you've said, anyone with a brokerage account, which I'm sure is most people listening to the show, can buy and sell it in seconds. And obviously there are significant advantages around purchasing an actively managed ETF as opposed to a traditional unit trust. There's greater transparency, so all the positions are disclosed on a daily basis as opposed to just the top 10 on a monthly basis. Like I've said, the fees are lower. It's just one of the it's just the structure of how it's set up. You are able to charge much lower fees. So we do think that we're actually still early to the party here, and that lots of other asset managers will follow suit. And it's also priced continuously, obviously intraday, just like a share. And the liquidity will be higher. So it does make it easier to get in and out of these products.
Yeah, absolutely. The liquidity as well does give you that ease. You mentioned the fees there. I mean, obviously, initially, as you scale up, the fees are potentially a little bit higher. But what sort of fees are you targeting on these products?
Yeah, Simon. So upon listing, we didn't want the total expense ratio, which is the total fee charged to an investor, to be above 1%. We thought that that was the psychological mark. We did not want to go over. So it's going to start off at 1%, and as we scale, this is going to come down to what the management fee is, which is at about 0.7%. With time, which we do expect obviously to scale, and we do think that the management fee will get there. And this is, I mean, for those who tend to look at the fact sheets of unit trusts, this is quite far below the traditional unit trusts. And I think most young people, as I've said, are just much more fee sensitive. It's something that they do consider in their investments. And the market simply has to respond to this investor behavior and these investor tastes.
Yeah, 100%. It certainly there is a move forward. We leave it there. That's Kieran Whitten from Anchor. The two funds are the Anchor Easy Equity, sorry, Easy ETF, Aspirant Global Equity AM ETF. That's the AAGEET, and the local one is the AASAET. Both trading on the JSE. Let your money weather the storms with STANLIB Asset Management. Invest in the STANLIB Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Ishmael Mpabanga. He is Regional Head Southern Africa and Senior Vice President at Intellect Design Arena. Ishmael, appreciate the time this morning. The unserved in the credit market in South Africa, potentially half of our population who can't get access to traditional credit. You're looking at ways to solve this problem using AI to help close this gap on the underserved in the credit space.
Absolutely. Good morning, Simon, and good morning to your listeners. I hope I'm audible.
Yes, we hear you loud and clear.
Wonderful. Yeah, I mean, AI is changing the way banks understand risk, Simon, because it allows institutions to look beyond traditional paperwork and start analyzing real financial behavior. Now, when you look at it, historically, lending decisions, they relied heavily on formal employment history, bureau scores, and for you and I have been through the same, right? So long banking relationships to get this done. However, many economically active South Africans, not just here in South Africa, but across Africa, don't neatly fit into those traditional models. But today, you know, we started to see, instead of appearing as a thin file to a traditional bank, AI has helped move from static scoring to dynamic intelligence. And that's what we do at Intellect Design Arena, to help banks do that.
And this is not about in any way lowering the bar. This is just about getting a better insight into individuals using the non-traditional way. In the olden days, you would go and, you know, look at my repayment schedule. There's other ways that you can do this and keep the sort of credit rate standards as per usual.
Absolutely. And it's definitely not about lowering the bar. I mean, we in the financial services space, we're constantly looking to see how we can improve and to increase revenue and as well as create a much better customer or client experience. Right? So lowering the bar is not what we're aiming to do, but the biggest challenges in lending was cost to serve. And and whether a bank processed 5,000 rands of loans or 500,000 rand in loans, many of those processes remained mostly identical, verification, documentation, compliance, and so on, right? But that made the smaller loans expensive and commercially difficult to scale. But with AI, we've automated this. We're changing the economics completely. And today, banks can automate customer onboarding, verification, risk assessment, and so on. And this dramatically lowers operational costs while improving turnaround time and the overall experience for the client.
I get that. So there's actually two parts to it. The one is just the ability to find better data, and the other one is to take that cost of the loan and significantly reduce it. Another important point, because I've heard some interviews coming out of the US where banks are avoiding AI because they're worried about the black box component of it. But in your case, there's not a black box. It will explain those decisions, which I think is important as well.
It is. I mean, we call it unraveling the black box, or the magician's Houdini. It made it disappear. All right, it's all about how do we start to build more financially inclusive systems and processes to help people's financial lives become easier, and how do we go beyond traditional banking systems? Now, economic behavior can now be understood through mobile wallet activity, utility payments, retail spending. All of this historically was in a black box. With AI first lending, we've unraveled that. So we allow banks to understand how people actually manage their money in real life. We help banks understand how people are looking at mortgages, vehicle finance, how they're paying the utilities, and so on, and the behavioral consistency is valuable intelligence. Now, all of this used to be in that black box. We now make it easier for banks and customers alike to start playing together nicely and becoming better economic citizens to grow our economy overall.
Gotcha. Absolutely. And it helps that 50% who typically are going to end up in the, I don't know, the darker corners of the lending world now suddenly can be involved in the real sort of economy and the credit side of it. We'll leave it there. Ishmael Mpabanga, he is Regional Head, Southern Africa and Senior Vice President, Intellect Design Arena. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We were chatting with John T. Sachs yesterday, here partner at Joltech. We were talking the Section 12J structure that comes to an end at the end of June. And there is some tax coming because you got a full refund on the tax when you went in, but it makes your cost base on the way out zero. So he said potentially $18 billion owed to SARS. We asked you if you'd invested in a 12J product. Over half said nope, you hadn't. A little under a third said yeah, it didn't go so great. The rest are saying was a great experience. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website, the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobukle, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.